For you, the day bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
This is the moment.
Yep.
This is the day.
Here it is.
This is this week.
We came to rock.
In Mormons.
Keep Jeff.
Down Alan.
River. We've come to rock. The
ocean never Alan Weasley.
Oh, dude, I'd be a killer Weasley. Me and my 19 kids. Mm.
It's like your dream.
It is my dream. That is my dream.
To be Ronald Weasley.
At this point in my life, all I have left is to have children, Jeff.
That's it.
And so, like, I just want to have kids and then raise them to do funny tricks.
Yeah? Like wizard tricks or just funny tricks?
No, if I raised another white wizard beside myself, I mean, maybe a dark wizard, but nothing true Harry Potter's. What I'm talking about is, like, I would raise one, and you know, you see these kids that you know, they're like 3 years old and they play the piano like a master because the parents just, like, give the kid away to a pianist and say, make him wonderful. That's what I want to have so many kids that I can give a kid to the circus and be like, I want him to walk the tightrope as a four-year-old. And then I give another kid away to, like, oh, I don't know, a pogo stick place and be like, let him do flips on a pogo stick. Then another one would be like a trampoliner. And then I just have these kids that did awesome stuff. That's what I'm looking for out of life now. And I feel like why be a dad if you can't give your children something meaningful like this? Like pogo stick flipping or trampolining. It's a real sport in the gymnastics.
Can one do a flip on a pogo stick?
Oh my gosh. Jeff. Google pogo stick tricks. Or give. What about like a kid to the yo-yo place? I mean, a yo-yoist would be amazing. I'd take him around. I'd just be like, check out what Curtis can do. And they'd be like, woo! Look at me, Dad! Look at me!
Oh, that's not a good flip. Now I'm just seeing just bloopers.
Fails? Are these pogo stick fails?
Here we go. Let's see what this guy does. Oh, look at these tricks. Oh, my goodness. This is like BMX biking.
Also, I would like to have my own child version of the Blue Man Group. And I feel like they would love this because it's paint and drums. And I would love seeing the Blue Man Group, but I'm too cheap to go. And so if I just had kids that were doing that for me in the garage... Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the right choice.
Vegas is very affordable. You should, you know, it only costs.
No, still, there's still $50 tickets, Jeff.
That's actually a good deal. Vegas is insane. What happened to the days when it was just this land of hedonism and $5 prime rib dinners? What happened to those buffets and things? Now it's all fancy restaurants and $12 crepes, stuff
what
like
are you saying?
That. What's happened to you, Las Vegas? I've never much cared for you, but now it's even worse.
Now that it costs money. So, Jeff, how is DC today?
Well, we have snow again. Every time it snows, I keep feeling like it just like has to be the last one of the season, given that we're in spring officially. We're pushing April at this point. But we had some snow today. Other than that, it's very pleasant. Things are fine. I've had a very interesting past week or so.
Oh, go on.
Sort of. First of all, I might butcher this story, so Danielle, forgive me if you listen, but you only listen to one in every like 10 shows, so I'm going to get away with this. So
yeah, I think you're safe.
So what's going to happen here? So apparently the other night, Danielle had a dream that involved you. Al.
Your wife dreamt about me.
Yes, but not in that way. She was. You were just like visiting us. You were here for something. You were crashing at our place, but
in the bedroom.
But as you are wont to do, you wanted to take a little nap because you're a napper. You like to take some shut eye. Moments.
Yeah, no, I'm a 20-minuter all the time. Sure.
So it was nap time, and I think we said, "Oh yeah, you can just go in our room, Al. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Take a nap in there, so we don't bug you out here."
Go on.
But then we went to get you when time was up. And you were like all the way under all the covers and everything. And Danielle was like, you went under the covers? No one.
Wait, so your wife dreamt of me under the covers in your bed.
Yeah, but the point of this is people don't nap under the covers, Al. And you were very rude in this world. So that happened. Also, you'll be happy.
Wait. But is it just because I'm like, and to her credit, I am a very familiar guy, right? Like when if I ask to borrow your car, I use your cup holders. Like I just make myself right at home. If you let me stay in the guest room, I'm probably going to use the dresser. I don't even use the dresser in my own house, but like, I like
That's
to live
true,
where
by
I am.
The way. I saw your bedroom in BYU, Hawaii.
Yeah. And, well,
the
so
clothes were anywhere but the dresser. It was amazing.
I lived out of the bag. I never unpacked while I was in college. But that's actually funny that your wife would dream about that. That's pretty random.
So that was amusing. Also, you'll be happy to know that I felt a man's hand on me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What exactly? How did this play out? Well, you had sex with?
No, admittedly, I was hoping for a more laughing response. So what happened to me is I had a Groupon for a massage, and I redeemed it.
Admittedly, I was looking for more.
And
okay, all right.
I went and redeemed it at this weird place. My goodness, this looks like something.
Wait, you got a massage from a man?
So they put me with a man, and I.
You can request a woman, Jeff.
There was none available, though. Ironically, the same person who arrived there as me was a woman, and she was given a woman, and I was given a man. Really?
I would leave.
It was very professional, you know. It was
the back of the hand, very professional.
It was very professionally
touching
done.
Touching it with the back of the hand.
I just
in a very professional manner.
You just close your eyes and grit your teeth and bear it, and everything works out okay. But I knew you'd be amused. Of course, my wife was giggly with Danielle was like cracking up that she thought it was so funny that this happened.
Wait, did she go with you?
No. She just knew about it.
She sent you alone to the massage parlor? Well,
it was a Groupon.
Credit, I don't think she has to worry about you at the massage parlor. When you...
She did say, you better
I'm
not
doing
get...
doing air quotes, accidentally get a man.
She did say you better not get turned on.
Yeah, well, that works.
I know.
That works.
I was
you
afraid.
Are an efficient man
I
when
was,
it comes to
I was worried. I said, what if I find out that I enjoy this too much? You know? What if?
That's what I always ask myself.
But then I remember that I'm really into women. Or woman.
There's nothing like woman. A massage from a man to remind you how into women you are.
I don't think I'd have had a massage from a man. Probably since, I'll admit it, my mission.
Oh, gross,
Those
Jeff.
Were, what? Every, elders?
That is not okay.
Elders would give little back rubs
no,
to each other.
No, this happened.
This was normal behavior in the world of missions.
Jeff, that is not normal behavior. That is your companion trying to trick you into something awful.
If they would just... No, he was way... Well, then again, he was so uptight.
That is a move that the other missionaries would use, Jeff.
If they would just lighten up and let the sister missionaries and the elders
oh my God.
Massage each
hate,
other for a little bit
oh
of R&R.
Oh my gosh, I hate you. We can't have this conversation. I'm not...
Everything would get better in missions.
No,
people
my gosh, that's awful. That is terrible.
This isn't terrible. This is real life. This is life now for me. So those are my big highlights. I got stuck with a man giving me a massage, and I'm not homophobic, but I don't think anyone's eager to lie down
well,
on a table.
Sometimes you have a preference. There are some girls that only like massages from guys, and some girls that only like massages from girls. But from a man perspective, I feel like culture dictates we are only allowed to like massages from women, and I have embraced that wholeheartedly.
I want to know what you think, dear listeners. Send us an email at contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Tell us what you think about massage etiquette. Is it okay for a man to feel another man's hand on him?
As a missionary? No.
Or in any context.
You probably were like back scratchers at church, too, you big weirdo.
No, you can't do that. That's in public. It's terrible. Oh, the other fun thing I did.
No, wait. You were massaging each other in private?
No. Where else would this happen?
Like relaxing at home and it was like a real massage?
I don't say it was a, quote, real massage.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, Jeff. This is a game changer. No, you cannot get a massage from a companion at home. Absolutely not. Like I could see maybe like, you know, you're you're riding on the bus and you're like, oh man, you're tense, huh, buddy? Hey, Hermano. But at home, like preparation day, let's set aside an hour to massage each other. How is that okay?
Okay, first of all, this is the reaction I was hoping for, by the way. Thank you.
Unacceptable.
Why would you do anything
I'm
like that in public?
Root beer.
In public?
Like, as tumblers are falling into place in my brain right now, I'm realizing that this is a very private, intimate session you've set up with, and not just one companion. The way you're phrasing this makes me think that you've done this with many companions.
I was a predator, apparently.
Chris Hansen would not have been okay with this either.
Speaking of, folks, listen to our old episode, My Date with Chris Hansen. Find it at thisweekinmormons.com. It's a winner.
Why are you plugging everything?
I don't know. I'm just having fun.
They're already listening to the show.
I want them to listen to more shows, especially ones from 4 years ago, because those are relevant now.
I would not recommend that at all. Okay. All right.
I am not ashamed. I had a wonderful mission.
How are you not ashamed, Jeff?
I'm not ashamed of anything. I'm proud of who I am, Al. I'm proud.
You man massager.
It's war. That's what it is. It's like war stories. If you were there, you would have understood. You were too busy seeing success in Ukraine, where everyone wants to get baptized. Us, on the other hand.
I remember that.
Yeah, we were. You know, we just slogged it out months and months with nothing to do. That was life. That's life in the real. That's
hard.
Life in the real Europe, the non-Russia controlled Europe. You know.
Oh my gosh, yeah. My head is just still reeling. I don't even know what to do with you. This, like, your entire mission, your entire sacrifice to serve the Lord has been called into question. I don't know what to do. Anyway. All right, Jeff, talk to us about something Mormon-y.
Well, the guy from Neon Trees is gay, since we're on this topic that is making Al so happy. Tyler Glenn, the lead singer of the group Neon Trees, the pop group from Provo, has, I don't think to anyone's real surprise, openly
massaged a companion on preparation day, if you know what I mean.
He has,
can that be a euphemism that we all understand now, Jeff?
Sure, yeah, whatever, sure, yeah, why not? So anyways, he in a...
Well, so in all seriousness, from what I understand, he is openly gay, still Mormon, right? There, those guys are active in their church.
I do not know
in
what
our church.
Well, it's not our business, but I don't know what the status would be. I believe they've been on the record saying we are all Mormon, but we are their drummer put it one way. She said we're on different rungs of the ladder. So
sure.
Some might
okay.
be more involved than others, I would guess.
Well, I hope that he can reconcile all of that, right? Like, that's my sincere hope in a situation like this, is that one does not dictate that you leave the other. It's not a zero-sum scenario. And so I would love to see him as an example of that, and I hope that he can sort through it all and figure out something that works for him.
Yeah, me too. I mean, this is apparently very big news, but
I saw it shared all over the place.
Yeah, I feel it's just another good person being open about his or her feelings. And he said he's always felt that way. He's proud to be out. I don't know, like what you said, Al, I have no idea what his desires are as far as reconciliation, as you said, you know, with church beliefs and stuff like that. I have no idea what his plan is.
Like,
if that's even a concern. I don't know. But
I mean, I wonder, like, the only way that works is if you say, I'm gay, I believe, I wonder, from what I understand, it's okay to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend if you are homosexual. You just can't have sex, right? It's essentially like you're living as a single 31-year-old.
Yes and no,
forever.
And I admit I don't know about that end of things. Because we've said, they say obviously you're keeping the law of chastity in that sense, but at the same time, the church teaches that homosexual behavior is wrong. So, but it's been unclear to me about that, what it means if there are those who don't engage in non-marital activities but are gay. Yeah, does that mean though? Really,
like making out? Is that what you're
thinking? That's what I'm saying. Like I think you're saying that they can make out, but I don't know because the church teaches that it's against the rules.
I don't know either. I know I used to home teach a guy that was an openly gay individual, and he lived with his boyfriend, but they didn't have sex, and he paid his tithing and went to church and like everything. He was just in a homosexual relationship, and seemed to be very happy and content with himself.
Yeah,
and content with his situation with the church, right? Like he had a testimony. He believed the doctrine and understood it.
Interesting. Well, the weird thing with that, though, is even cohabitating in that sense. It's not like I could have just cohabitated with my girlfriend and not had, you know, people take issue with that at some point, even if chastity was totally observed.
It's the ultimate loophole, Jeff, because then you could fake gay just to live with a woman so that you could then be... I mean, it's the classic Chuck and Larry episode.
Oh, I was about to go to Chuck and Larry. You beat me to it. Dang it.
Said no one ever, but the like, I mean, I don't know. It would prove a true. I don't know. That's why it's hard to draw a line in the sand and say this is right, this is wrong. And I'd be curious what the instruction bishops have received around that is. You know, how do you handle that?
Yeah, and by handle that you mean specifically if you're being chased. In the broader context, but
if you want to be a worthy, active Mormon homosexual,
can you kiss other people?
Kissing. Sure.
Can you be
Can you live? Can you live in a house of guys if you're gay?
Yeah.
Or is that too much?
Here's something I'm curious about because, since we're on this topic. Because, you know, I think it's good. We've become, I think, a bit more accommodating and mindful of our fellow brothers and sisters who are homosexuals or sympathize with them, whatever it may be. And, like, you know how now, of course, even at BYU, you can no longer get disciplined for openly saying you are gay. And this goes back to what we were just talking about, Al. But, yeah, where's the line as far as what gets you in trouble? But what I'm curious about, missionaries, if it's not wrong to come out and say I am gay but I'm a believer and I keep the rules, and therefore one would assume you could go on a mission, but then what does that mean? Would they have them be in the MTC in the same bunks with same gender? Would they have weird segregated gay missionary housing, which I feel like could
serve any purpose, right? I mean, I think absolutely you would be able to go and live because you're gay doesn't mean you're attracted to everyone. Well, right, yeah. And also it doesn't mean that you can't control yourself sexually. But
did you and I share quarters with sister missionaries? And would that ever happen?
We should have.
Even if we weren't attracted to them, which we weren't, but...
Well, which is why missionaries share the same room but not the same bed, Jeff. That is why that rule is there.
I never shared a bed.
That's what I'm saying.
I kept that rule.
And so long... Like, gay or straight, as long as you're not sharing a bed, I think you're safe.
Okay. But I'm curious about that.
Shower alone, no sharing beds. That'll keep every missionary fine.
I would love to hear if we have any bishops listening or people who know some of the finer lines, if anything has been revealed. That'd be great to know.
Yeah, I'm a little curious also, because it wouldn't be in the handbook, right? It's going to be something that people are just, like, you're just going to be instructed.
You know, I really wonder, because, you know, how old are the newer handbooks that we have now? They're only a couple of years old now, but I feel like so much has happened with gay rights, even in that time, that it almost makes big chunks of those manuals potentially outdated, you know, already, really. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, continuing on the same theme, David Archuleta is back.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Home from the mission.
Oh, good. It's already been
He posted a video on YouTube that says, "Hola, ¿cómo estás? I'm home."
It appears this is like right when he got back, because I believe that is Salt Lake Airport behind him.
He's done it. E! News is reporting there's over 90,000 views on that. That means 90,000 people remember that he was something.
I desperately hope that he has a monetized YouTube page, because the money that's going to come just from an 11-second video... It's brilliant, really. The man knows what he's doing. He's already...
People are so excited to have him home.
He's already saving for his senior mission. Very excited. I'm just glad he's back because then he'll be around to talk about instead of... I was very angry, if you remember, over Christmas, though.
I don't remember.
There was a Christmas concert, and the church went very out of its way to feature Elder Archuleta performing, which is nice.
Oh,
he's an international singer. I was bothered because I feel like there are tons of missionaries with talents.
Oh, I remember. Yes, you were offended that they were capitalizing on the talent and skills of missionaries to share the gospel.
No, they were capitalizing on the talent of a famous missionary to further the agenda.
Still a talent.
It's still a talent, but at the same time, I feel like, well, he's a great kid, but he's no better than the other missionaries.
Isn't he?
No. Let other missionaries sing and perform as well. He's no more special than they are. You know, I don't. But it's not that big of a deal. But he's home now. He's likely been released, and he has got lots of fan mail to answer and dirty pictures from fans to quickly show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This poor kid's going to come back into a lion's den, let me tell you.
He has no idea what he's left behind.
He doesn't. Chile was very nice. But welcome back, Elder Archuleta.
Yeah, welcome home. We at TWIM are excited to have you back.
Yeah, he's going to be on the podcast next week.
Really?
Nope.
Okay. Anyway, let's see. I'll keep going, Jeff. I got more stories.
Take me there. Last week, I actually listened to...
Did you know Glenn Beck saw Noah this week?
Well, that's changed my life. Thank you for this news.
And he says, this is not your Bible lover movie. So a lot of us, including Jeff, we're very excited to have a very biblical take on Noah. I was expecting sort of a Evan Almighty, but with Russell Crowe. I was thinking of a Bruce Almighty, maybe. But no, that's not the case. Turns out Noah wants to kill people. His family, mainly.
Spoiler alert.
And there are rock people that help Noah. So Glenn Beck gets invited to go see it. He reads a review about it and tells everybody that it's awful. The guy at Paramount was like, come see the movie before you judge it. He said, okay. So he goes and sees the movie, comes back, and just says, no. This is awful. I'm horribly disappointed. Kind of entertaining, though. If you are entertained by Glenn Beck, you should watch it.
I just love how, what did you say that he called it, the Babylonian Chainsaw Massacre?
Well, that's right. I think would be fair, right? So I'm excited. I hope that it holds up
here's,
to that.
Here's the thing. I don't know if within Christian circles, is there angst associated with this film because people are hoping for a Christian movie, an uplifting biblical story?
Every time I see it, I'm like, yeah, Noah done right. Let's do this.
Because I have no idea, because I'm not expecting that. I'm expecting, it's a Darren Aronofsky movie for one, so I'm not expecting, but then I'm just expecting like an action movie that loosely uses the characters from the story of Noah to tell its tale. Noah, after all, in the Bible is a pretty short passage of the whole thing with Noah and the Ark. It's not very long. So of course you add things to make it a film. Whether that's questionable or not, I don't know, but it just makes me wonder if people are upset about this. You know, the Christian movie going public feels underrepresented in Hollywood typically.
Yes.
Because not a lot of
thank you.
Not a lot of fare is made that is good. There's that movie that just came out this past weekend, God Is Not Dead, that did fine, and it shows that the Christian audiences want to gobble things up. But I don't know if there's anger about Noah because it's you know, maybe it's going to have blowback because it blasphemes.
No, the opposite. Noah is actually the angry one. He is the Chainsaw Massacre.
You know, we might as well explain this.
He's a murderer.
Yeah.
In this
basically,
movie.
Yes. The spoiler is Noah apparently tries to kill his own family because Noah says that God commanded.
That's not the climax. That's just that's part of the show. That's part of the script. That's not the whole thing.
I know, but I guess that's what's upsetting people. That Noah's rationale was that like people are evil, and God only wanted animals on the ark. So,
well, there was a certain question that may have come up along this, which we've all considered at some point, Jeff. Which, maybe all people are evil, and I should only hang out with puppies.
Yeah, it happens.
It's a real question.
But I might still go see Noah. Why not?
I will definitely go see it.
Okay.
If it's within my rating scale and I don't have...
it's PG-13.
Now we're doing that again. What if it was R?
It's PG-13, Al. It's PG-13.
Thank goodness. My life is
I can even tell
saved.
You why. Maybe IMDb will give us greater information.
No, I don't care. Once it's PG-13, I don't even look. I'm the opposite of Kurt Franken, where I'm just like, if it falls within my archaic rating scale... then I ignore everything else.
It's PG-13 for violence, disturbing images, and brief suggestive content.
No nudity.
Nope, just suggestive. But Hermione is in it from Harry Potter, so.
Oh, I loved her.
Yeah. This is happening.
Emma Watson, huh?
She will be loved, just as the wonderful band Maroon 5
Maroon
once said.
Maroon 5.
She will.
I saw them in concert once.
Wait a minute. You saw Maroon 5?
I was the only guy not 14 years old or not a girl. Like, it was complete women and 14-year-old boys and then me.
Where was this?
I was like, let's see. I was 22. I went with my girlfriend at the time. We drove to St. Louis to see this. And it was awful. It was really bad. Mainly because, like, I didn't know any of the words to these songs because I was like, wait, they have more than just that. They had, like, one song at the time that I knew. That's probably it. And I was just like, wait, what? They have a whole album? That's the thing you don't think of when you go and see people, like, that you know from the radio. They're going to play only their music, not just their one good song. And, I mean, really, I feel like that was the downfall of Creed. If Creed could have just played their one great song from the radio, people would have loved him. But they had a whole album.
A 70-minute set of different versions of Arms Wide Open. Just different
good
versions.
Good night.
You play the regular version, then the radio edit, then the country version with Willie Nelson, then the techno remix with Daft Punk, and you just...
With Arms Wide Open...
Yeah. Okay, here's the question for you. Which is worse, Creed or Nickelback?
Creed.
Really? Worse than Nickelback?
Now, that being said, I've listened to Creed, ironically, on road trips. I've never once listened to Nickelback by choice. So maybe Nickelback.
Okay, now here's which one is better then? Creed or the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack?
Oh, Beauty and the Beast soundtrack. Jeff, come on.
I know.
It's a little pitched off.
It's Bush League, I know. Slope.
Keep going.
All right, so in the Boy Scouts, apparently.
In the Boy Scouts.
So, you know, you got the Boy Scouts, and the church has a long-standing relationship with the Boy Scouts. And as they describe it here at the Utah Scouting Commission's official page, they describe him as patriotic artist John McNaughton. Has captured the essence of scouting in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with his new masterpiece, Sacred Fire. The Sacred Fire is not an ordinary fire. No, no, no. Because it's magical. But what we have here is a campfire setup and a scoutmaster. And then the presidents of the church who have been presidents when we were involved in scouting, so basically everybody after Lorenzo Snow and... they're all just around the campfire, living the dream. President Monson's wearing a beautiful cardigan. Looks wonderful.
That seems... Wait, so we're reporting on a painting of prophets that are wearing Boy Scout paraphernalia.
These are prophets wearing... because it's the Boy Scouts and the scouting and the church and the things and the pudding pops.
So who's the guy that did this?
It's John McNaughton, man. Come on.
John McNaughton. I feel like John McNaughton is just a weirdo.
John McNaughton is the fair? One that makes all kinds of just...
Also, I am 90% certain there are two Thomas S. Monsons in this picture.
No, which...
There is the Thomas S. Monson Beaver Scouting Award Thomas in the middle with the big hat, and then the one to the right with the cardigan.
What? Which one? Where's the first one?
In the middle. Who's the guy in the middle?
That's just like a scoutmaster. With the neckerchief?
No. You don't get a scout master.
You do. They're around a scout master, you know, saying, hey, light the...
Who is the scout master? Is that supposed to be Jesus?
He's the sacred fire master.
That's Thomas S. Monson. That was his nickname in high school.
So you're telling me that in this photo, okay, or in this painting, rather, you have a scout master in full scout garb with the hat and the neckerchief.
One loves scouting so much.
Who's kneeled down.
Maybe there's a mustache.
And then, hold on.
Is that a mustache on the middle guy?
Yeah, he's got a mustache. So maybe it's Tadar Callister, the man whose mustache status I cannot discern.
Yeah, that's
Does
fair.
Tad Callister have a mustache or not? I can't figure it out for the life of me. But no,
that's fair. Are we looking at Ezra Taft Benson over on the right, or is he the one standing behind Thomas S. Monson?
Okay, no, the far right is President Kimball. Next to him is Howard W. Hunter. Thomas S. Monson's in the red cardigan. Then going in the back rail, looks like you've got Harold B. Lee, David O. McKay, President Hinckley. Then President Benson is after that.
That's Gordon?
The short one? Yeah.
He doesn't even look like him with all that hair.
That's because John McNaughton is a patriotic artist, not a good artist. Just a patriot.
By patriotic, you mean he paints pictures of angry Obama's burning constitution.
Exactly. Obama just points at the Constitution and says, I'm burning it. So in that sense, if you're passionate about scouting and you like the church being involved in it, perhaps you should submit something to this article that says, hey, I don't know if we should be rubbing shoulders with John McNaughton, because he might not be the best brand with which to associate
ourselves. Yeah, that's
fair.
That's fair.
That's fair. I know it's fair.
All right.
I said it.
Let's see. There is a... what else do we want to talk about? Elder Holland went and visited Asia recently.
How'd that work out for him?
Well, they said it worked out really well.
Where did he go?
I wasn't there, but they seemed to really like him.
Why wouldn't they? Guy gets to go to Asia for kicks and giggles.
So he just went, he hung out in India, he went through China, Taiwan. But yeah, everybody's very excited to have him. So
yeah,
way to go. He's out and about.
I guess a big deal here is it there was some kind of an anniversary for the church's involvement in Hong Kong in particular. So that's
65th anniversary.
There you go. It's kind of a weird one to celebrate, but that's okay.
Well, no, I mean, at that. Once you're over 50, it's so long till you get 75.
Also, I feel like Matthew Cowley dedicated everywhere. Anytime
Matthew Cowley was a man
anytime,
about the Lord's
anytime
work.
Anytime there's an anniversary of the gospel being dedicated somewhere, it's like always says it was Matthew Cowley who did it. Good for him. Powered. But good job, Elder Holland. I love seeing the growth of the church in Asia, particularly because most of these countries, every single one other than the Philippines and East Timor, are not natively Christian nations. And so I think the church growing in an area without a base of Christianity is just a fascinating endeavor. And to see that we can still have growth and success in these places, it's inspiring.
It'd be so weird to be taught about a religious leader that you'd never heard of.
Yeah.
Or that you just didn't know.
I mean, on my mission here and there, we'd teach some Chinese Buddhists, and trying to actually explain these concepts of Jesus, it's so easy to take for granted. And so you really have to think about how you phrase everything and how to make it make sense. It's very easy to put the gospel in palatable terms when you're working with a Christian audience, but totally different elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
But the church has growth. I mean, even in Thailand, oh my goodness. We have a state, we have like a lot of church in Thailand. It actually shocks me how much we have in Thailand.
Let's say six church. We have six.
We have a sizable stake in Bangkok. And then a lot of branches throughout the rest of the country over like four districts. It's actually pretty impressive. Bigger than I thought it would be.
You know, I do what I can.
Yeah, I know you do. Let's see here. In other news, more updates here on our fine friends at Ordain Women. Basically, we've got the women's meeting this weekend. It's no longer Relief Society. It's just the women's.
The young
meeting.
Women Mormons.
It's the women's meeting. And ordained women supporters are being asked to wear purple during the meetings in a show of solidarity and distraction.
Wait, why is that a distraction? I'll just wear my Weber State tie.
There you go. Oh, you know it's the same thing. It's like, why are you there? Are you there to be seen, or are you there to be instructed? What's your purpose?
Well, Jeff, just because I'm wearing purple does not mean I don't like instruction.
If I recall on the last...
That being said, if I am going to Weber State, I probably am not a big fan of an education. And so maybe that is what they're saying.
Or have,
Maybe it's saying, I choose to remain in stupidity.
I feel bad for Weber State, because I think Utah State gets a lot of love up there in Logan. And, you know, University of Utah does fine. UVU's even got some love, and Dixie's got
Wait, who is loving UVU?
Locals who grew up in the shadow of BYU and don't want to go there because they like sex.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty much it.
And then Weber, what does Weber get?
They nothing. Just have that Weber's great in Ogden. Chocolate milk. Ogden is where hope goes to die. There's nothing there.
Ogden is like Omaha.
No, Omaha is a cooler town than sister Ogden. Cities. Omaha is a much cooler town than Ogden. Do you not remember?
No, Omaha was awful also.
Al, we had crocodile bites at that terrible Triple D place.
That's what I'm saying. That terrible Triple D place would also be in Ogden.
But then we actually, I believe there's a really good Triple D place in Ogden. But then we found that statue of the swimmer in Omaha. That was great. You got to admit that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. All right. I clearly can't talk to you. If you can't appreciate how terrible Omaha is, you're never going to appreciate
why would
how
I hate Omaha? It has
Ogden
a decent
is.
University system. It has an okay economy. Warren Buffett's from there. And it's actually got a good food and music scene. I'm just saying.
It didn't have a good food or music scene.
It's not. Thanks. It's not Kansas City. I get that. But it's Omaha. You know, living the dream. Omaha.
Hey, speaking
I was
of
not
women.
Oh, I was going to say.
Oh, yeah. Keep going.
Well,
go ahead.
Well,
no.
I was
going
to transition into it in case you didn't see it last week. Kate Kelly of Ordained Women also appeared with some other ladies on a Google Hangout just chit-chatting about women's issues in the church. And it was actually very interesting.
Just talking about the issues.
Yeah, but it was interesting. We posted it on our site. I think it's,
did she seem angry, or is she a level-headed
individual?
No,
she's very level-headed. She's smart. She knows what she's doing. She knows how to effectively market what she's doing. She knows exactly what to say. She very much understands the public affairs angle of things. But I did feel that the other participants came off as more objective and more grounded. I feel like a lot of Kate Kelly's arguments for ordained women come from are emotional ones, or ones that come from apocryphal accounts during the Restoration era, which is fine. But when you compare that with others who can cite more specific examples throughout the Old Testament, the New Testament, and make a sounder understanding
of
things.
Like, what are we talking about? Give me an example of an argument that's going back and forth.
Oh, well, I don't know about going back and forth. Here's a classic one. Everyone always talks about, who was it? It wasn't Lucy. No, who was it? Was it Emma Smith? You know the blessing of the ox, right? You know that story. You know, I'm blanking on the person. It wasn't Emma, was it? No, it wasn't Emma. Emma stayed. But the point is, the famed tale of the blessing of the ox and how that shows priesthood and stuff, when actually, if you do the research on that story, it was actually that she asked the brethren to bless the ox. Like, that's a big one.
Wait, for real?
Yeah. There's other parts I don't remember because I didn't take notes. But I just felt like there was a good understanding, if you look at the Old Testament, and understanding women's roles with priesthood.
Wait, so is the claim that women used to have the priesthood and they don't now?
Well, that could be part of it, or that there's been examples.
Because there, so there is, I mean, there's writings, particularly in the early days of the church, that do allude to some of that,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It alludes to the fact that they had, you know, they maybe had a little bit more liberties with accessing the priesthood and things of that nature. Now, I always understood it when my mom was teaching me about how her role in the priesthood functioned was that by having, you know, like having the family unit together, right, where dad was presided in the home with priesthood, mom at any time had the ability to draw on the priesthood power that blessed our home via dad, essentially, and bless us. And it wasn't lay your hands on our heads or sort of blessings, but she would often pray via the access of the priesthood, which you know, was in our home. And I never understood there to be a problem with that. I mean,
yeah,
like,
but that
felt complete to
but
me.
But if you were trying to argue the other point, wouldn't you say, why does it have to be via anything? Like, you know, why do I have to exercise the priesthood via something? Even though in all actually,
why do we have to have keys even at that point?
I know.
Why,
or you
why
can even
can't
say,
it just
what?
Be to everyone?
Why do I have to exercise
I don't mind
the priesthood
there being I don't mind there being a channel, to go back. The only thing that I feel like you could take issue with is if you didn't have access to the blessings of the priesthood because you were a woman or something of that nature, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess.
And do you feel like Kate Kelly is sort of trying to construct this house of cards that supports that theory? Because in reality, that's not the case. I mean, women aren't denied access to priesthood blessings. At least in my understanding, I don't see that as a problem. But I'm not a woman, and so I don't. I mean, maybe there's sensitivities there that I don't understand.
Well, I think Nylon McBain, who was one of the other pundits.
Wait, is that a real name? Nylon McBain?
Nylon, I don't remember how to say it. Nalen, I don't remember. But she actually worked.
The guy's name is Nylon, and he supports women.
It's a woman. It's a
real
woman.
Funny, Jeff. It's a Nylon support women. Here we go.
It's a woman. She's a woman. Well, she actually works for Bonneville Communications, and I believe
I'm very pleased with myself.
I know you are. There. You're so happy. But I do believe that one of the problems here is it's one thing to lobby for greater roles for women in the church, which I think is great, and it's overdue in many, many areas, and I hope that continues to grow and get better. But then I think the ordained women's side of things feels that the ordination of women is the only vehicle by which that can be attained. And I think a lot of people don't feel that way. And I don't feel that way either. If God wants to give women the priesthood, then great. Let's make it happen, and it's all good, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with asking about it. There's nothing wrong with inquiring about it. There's nothing wrong with having an opinion about it and pushing for it. Whatever, you know? But finding greater equity for women in the church and a stronger role doesn't necessarily have to be tied to the notion of having the priesthood. There are some things, if women are really big on wanting to pass the sacrament or bless babies or stuff, sure, that's priesthood specific, but a lot of the other areas are just like, no, I think it's time that we can have female Sunday school presidents. Don't really know why we don't. Just things like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's plenty of visibility. And that one's still beyond me. Like, why can't we have female ward mission leaders? There are no keys involved there. Just a calling. Like many other callings.
Speaking of which, so there's one along those lines. There was a the gal that was called to lead the institute.
Oh yeah.
So she's leading the institute out in, I think it's Boston.
It's Cambridge, yeah, the Harvard ones. Yeah. I'm
trying to find the story.
I've got it right here. Her name's Barbara Morgan.
Barbara, there it is. Yeah, so Barbara Morgan. So now you suggested, Jeff, that you think this is the first time that a female has run a like an institute operation.
I'm not sure. I mean, it's obviously it's a bigger deal because it's a big institute. It's the one in Cambridge. But as far as I know, I've never seen a woman.
Also, out of the ordinary in this story is she is single and has no children.
But that is
which is required for any woman in the CES system.
Which is why you don't often see female instructors in general when you go to institute.
Because they're married having kids.
Well, and
that disqualifies them they should be.
How do you feel about that? I understand the church wants to encourage women to be moms and be with kids and do this and that. But what do you think? Do you think that's a step too far and that they should leave the door open for any woman who wants to do it if that's her choice?
Well, it's hard to be disqualified from anything, right? At this point, I'm not allowed to serve in the temple because I'm unmarried.
I know, which I also think is super weird.
As a man. And so, like, there's I hear that, and I'm like, I am a good, worthy, church-going dude.
Sure you are.
I would love to serve in the temple. Why can I not, why can't I do that? And that's a little bit, it's a little bit
frustrating. Do you know the answer to that?
I have no idea.
Because I've even looked into it, and I tried to ask somebody at the temple once, and then I didn't really get a very good answer. And I'm extremely curious about that. Because I, too, thought about being a worker, but I was pushing 31, and I was like, oh, there's no point now. So they're just going to kick me out.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't have any idea. I have no idea why that would be the case.
Yeah,
but then
the same thing with women. Yeah, like why can't women? Who cares if they're married and have kids? The men are married and have kids. I don't know. I just feel I understand women being in the home, but at the same time, who are we to stand in the way of that?
Yeah.
If someone wants to do this and it's okay with their family situation, and they're still believing in values, and you have to be, you know, active in the church, and you have to have a recommend. You have to do all those things to be employed by CES. They don't mess around. So, like, what's the worry?
Well, I mean, this situation, right? Like, her being not married and not having kids was what disqualified her. Not that she well, no, was married and had
Well, kids. this is what qualified her. The fact that she has no, she's not married and has no children, and that is required for her to be a CES employee.
Oh. I misread that.
Yeah, I think you were a little mixed up there. That's what I'm saying. That the only
that was a classic Mormon Trek reference right there.
So that's the point. Yeah, a woman can only work for CES if she is if she's Sherry Dew. You know, those. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. Like, if I'm married to a woman and she's a phenomenal teacher and I want to babysit the kids one night a week, why couldn't we do that?
Well, that's a little bit different. I believe I've seen plenty of married women do the one-off, you know, once a week type institute courses that are just
one. Like, go be an institute director and.
But to be like a full-blown tenured CES teacher is a different beast. And that's where
maybe they just don't want to offer gainful employment to women.
Well, they don't. I mean, you know, some things in the church are so funny. I remember it was only a couple of years ago that the church said women didn't have to wear pantyhose at the office anymore.
We reported on this.
Yeah, I mean, this is like out of Mad Men or something.
I believe it was Mrs. Nylon herself that brought that up.
Oh, well played. And other women's issues. This guy.
Oh, keep going.
Yeah, might as well. So this guy over at the Standard Examiner is asking he's talking about the fact that this is Utah specific, but the women are not well represented in Utah politics. I've heard that many times. I've had people who have worked and done consulting at the Utah State Legislature, and they describe it very much like they might describe church. It seems like it's a boys' club, and women are only there to be secretaries and stuff like that. For the most part.
Boo.
So it's very rare, but he's saying it's time to take the blame away from the church and say that this is, because everyone says it's the church's fault. It's the church's fault that women don't run for office in Utah, which it might be a fine thing to say, but his only really retort to the idea is that women might make better candidates, and maybe in all actuality, they just think that it's like stupid that women are smarter than men, and they realize that politics are a quagmire of sorts.
Men are ego driven and get in there and then hate
their lives.
I don't
think women stay out of politics because they know it's nasty. I don't really think that's why it is. I think in Utah, in the case, it is because it's a little more taboo.
The church would discourage it, yes?
I guess I don't know if I go as far as discourage, but certainly it raises eyebrows if you're supposed to be a mother in the home and instead you're like, no, I'm running for the state assembly. It's what I want to do. But then you get people like Mia Love, who everyone gets behind.
What's up with that?
Yeah. Hypocrites.
All right, so we want to talk a little bit about infallibility, Jeff.
Okay, take me there.
There's an article written by Holly Welker. Looks to be a weird, sort of a Luna Lovebottom sort of character. Pleasant features, I guess. Anyway, so she writes an article on
women love
us. Just her picture is so prominent right there. I feel like you should hide that at the bottom of the article. There's an article written called The Mormon Version of Infallibility. Starts off with a quote saying, there's an old saying, Catholics say the Pope is infallible but don't really believe it. Mormons say the prophet is fallible but don't really believe it. So in this article, she's working around the idea that, and we've talked about it in weeks before, but how Mormons treat the prophet and when a prophet speaks, it's doctrine, and you shouldn't question, you should believe, and that's what it is, right? Well, so that's sort of what's being digested in this article. And it's not, I mean, it's actually a pretty good article. I don't agree with everything that she says in here. The premise, of course, that we do, I think it's an interesting thing to talk about just because I haven't exactly articulated what my thoughts are on the infallibility of our prophet is, right? Because we believe that a prophet will not lead us astray, right? That a prophet in our day that leads our church, the Church of Jesus Christ, will not lead us astray. And that is a canon belief.
Mm-hmm.
You agree?
Yeah.
So So when can a prophet then, like, what is the room for error or the margin of error for a prophet? Like, can a prophet say wrong things? Can he get up and say, thus saith the Lord, and speak something that we may find out later to be not entirely accurate? Or, like, is there a sense that he just would never say anything that is not complete and perfect doctrine, bred by a perfect understanding of both religion and sciences and
social
norms?
Well, here's something that comes to mind, and I don't know if this is directly related, but while you were posing this question, I thought of then Elder Benson. Now, when Elder Benson was in the 12, he was a firebrand. He was associated with the John Birch Society. He was a noted, like, hardcore conservative, which is fine if you're a conservative, but, like, the type that went pretty far, like a McCarthyian conservative of the era. He once even said that the civil rights movement was a front for communism and stuff like that. And he said these things as an apostle. And there were many times President McKay, especially, tried to rein him in. They tried to rein him in, you know, but they couldn't get a lot done. But the interesting point of this is, whether it was just from being older and wiser or who knows what, by the time Elder Benson became President Benson never really uttered much of anything along those lines. I mean, he said some things about the dangers of communism and the like, because it was the Cold War, but he talked about, you know, very prophetic things and prophetic counsel. And I very easily think that a lot of that comes with the role and assuming that mantle and being guided in a way as to the best things to say. And we don't have perfect examples of this all over the place, but that's definitely one where there was a man who was in the 12 who was regarded as a prophet, seer, and revelator, had a fundamental change of tone and discourse by the time he was leader of the church.
Well, so let's say we have a quote from Brigham Young that isn't entirely flattering.
Like Adam being God?
Like, well, sure. There's a few. Okay. A few that don't particularly, I mean, jive with what we understand to be truth now, right? Like, does that mean that Brigham Young was not a prophet? Does that mean that, like, how do you digest that? Because we do believe that Brigham Young was a prophet, but we don't necessarily believe that everything he said is perfect doctrine.
Well, the hard thing is, for one thing, we need to delineate, I think, and we've talked about this many times, between when you know, Tom Monson is talking to us and President Monson is talking to us.
Does that work, though? Because you can... I mean,
I don't know.
He's President Thomas S. Monson. He doesn't get to be Tommy.
That's true. But
off his own opinion. Because even if a prophet spouts his own opinion, you still are going to weight that differently than if just a man is spouting opinion.
It's true. But you know what I mean. I mean, I've said this before. But if you go to Deseret Book, you'll buy some book by Elder Bednar. But it'll make a point to say that this is, you know, a book by... It's basically by David A. Bednar, and that isn't necessarily the church's position. So then it begs the question, well, then why is this being sold at somewhere like Deseret Book, which represents the church and which is going to be gobbled up by pious members of the church, if it's not actually being written from the point of saying, you know, this is the law, this is what...
Isn't
what
it is. The hope is that these men have a greater understanding and...
Exactly.
But you go into it understanding that they're going to teach you truth. Mm-hmm. And if you find out that they were teaching you not truth, is there room in our testimonies to handle imperfect people that teach imperfect things?
Well, I think it depends. I do think limited understanding can always be a part of it. I mean, we have great examples of that with Elder McConkie. But that can happen. There's always limited understanding because things can change. And the one thing I firmly believe in is that revelation and leadership, even from the prophet, is directly related to personality, one's personal beliefs, one's management style, all sorts of things. This might be a prophet and a mouthpiece of the Lord, but it is still very much a man. And that man, that mortal being, is the vehicle by which the prophetship can go forward. So, of course, that rubs off on it in one way or another.
Well, yeah. Well, and my thought is always, you know, you're steering a big ship. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And so if you're right on 80% of the stuff and you got 20% that like you're just not tying down the way that maybe the Lord is wanting you to, right? The Lord's still, like, you're not gonna wreck anything.
Yeah.
When we talked about blacks in the priesthood, you know, we had a similar question where we're like, well, Brigham Young, you know, Joseph Smith was yes, blacks can have the priesthood. Brigham Young came in and was yes until a point, and then he went no. And then the next three prophets to be in there were, none of them were interested enough in the situation to even think yeah. about it or talk about it. And then finally it came back and was righted, right? It took, you know, 80, 100 years. But it was fixed eventually. And so, I mean, you could look at that in one of two ways. You could look at it and say, I can't believe the Lord would let this happen. The church must not be true. Or you can look at it and say, I mean, the Lord let men continue to grow and work, and he's on a bigger timeline. He's fixing things as he's able to fix the men,
yeah.
right? And maybe he needed to fix society before he could bring it back in. I don't know. I'm not going to make excuses.
That's a good way to look at it, though, is that the Lord is fixing things in time through his imperfect vehicles. I just think the main difference in what's hard for a lot of people is, say, you know, if we read the scriptures, you read the Book of Mormon, and it's not nuanced in the sense that, have you ever had something where we pick it apart and we try to figure out, you know, well, you know, was Nephi wrong about this? We don't have those discussions. Yeah. Did Nephi lead anybody astray? We take the scriptures themselves as straight up counsel one way or the other to help us out. And so I think people get very confused in the modern days when, you know, you can't necessarily say that. And that might even just be a product of the times and the product of a global church. Could be a lot of things. But I do like what you said, just like I said before, that the Lord is working things out in his own way. But he still has to leave us as agents with agency to do it. And sometimes we're going to mess stuff up and we're going to do things
that's
wrong.
Right.
And a lot of times the Lord is going to let us do things wrong and get out of the way because that's just what he's going to do. I'm convinced God intentionally lets us just flub stuff up because we also have to learn how to fix it.
Well, we say it all the time, man. The Lord doesn't call perfect men to be prophets. He calls old guys that are working through their own stuff to come in and be a prophet and gives them this great responsibility, and they become a prophet over time.
But right? I do want to challenge in this article, you know, I want to challenge any notion that questioning or seeking truth is wrong. And I love that, of course, Elder Uchtdorf has spoken more about that recently, you know, that it's valuable. And oftentimes we take that quote from, as she even calls it, Elder Oak's imperious declaration, that it's wrong to criticize leaders of the church.
Yeah, he's been thrown under the bus.
Even if the criticism is true. Now, what Elder Oaks is saying in this moment is not it's wrong to work things through and be critical in an objective, perhaps academic.
Yeah, critical thinking is not a
question. When he is saying criticism in this case, he is saying backbiting against the Lord because that doesn't help anybody. And that's true, and I believe in that. I don't think it's wrong to pick apart what we're taught and try to figure out the rationale behind it and understand it. But I also think there is something to be said for, as they might call it, as if it's a negative thing, blind obedience, which is not always easy. But I say bless those who can easily obey counsel that comes from a prophet without trying to justify every little bit of it in their heads or pick it apart or choose what they want to do and what they don't want to do. That takes faith.
And right? In closing, if I may sort of give a hat tip to the ordained women movement again here, where the you know, like, if you're in a situation where your leader is not, in your opinion, doing what he's supposed to do, right? The correct thing is not to criticize the leader. It's not to, like, you don't just do the wrong thing and continue to do it. I mean, it's okay to try and enact change and have discussions about it. Particularly if you can do that without singling out the leader or making it a personal attack on that bigoted, blah, 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 crazy guy, right? Like, if you can keep it about the doctrine and have discussions about that, I think that is healthy, which the ordained movement, to a large extent, has done very well, mm-hmm. right? They've tried to have discussions about the purposes and whys and hows and all of that. I don't, you know, Jeff and I both are in agreement where we don't particularly love the fact that it's a protest at General Conference, but it's never been President Monson is doing this thing to us, or the old leaders are this way because of X. I mean, it's been very much doctrine focused. So props to them for keeping it a clean fight, so to speak.
Exactly. I mean, I've got a lot of other women related stuff we could talk about this week, but we're already, you know, the show is so full.
It got crazy.
So
Jeff.
Full
it got crazy.
Of so many wonderful things. I'll just make a mention of this one then. Al didn't love it, but I thought it was at least interesting to read. There is an article here in Utah Valley 360, of all publications. It's called, I may have been the last woman to attend priesthood session. And it's actually interesting. This is the story of in the 90s when this girl was at Rick's and was selected as part of a media entourage to go to conference and report. And part of that involved attending the priesthood session. And so she attended, but she had very interesting experiences where people said it like made them uncomfortable. She was a distraction. Stuff along those lines, which kind of is sad in many ways. But it's a fine read. I mean, it's, you know, I'd say give it a look.
Mediocre at best.
No, it's okay. You haven't even read it.
Average.
Uh-huh. Al, why are Mormons the most liberal?
I don't know. We'll talk about it next week. Jeff.
What?
You can reach us, everybody, at contact at This Week in Mormons, or visit our website, thisweekinmormons.com. We love you.
We do.
We do.
We do. We do. We do. We also hope that however you're listening to this, that you will subscribe to it and by whatever means you see fit. And also please subscribe to our other podcasts, Sunday School Bonanza, all about gospel doctrine stuff, going through the lessons on there, and Third Hour of Power by our friends at This Mormon Life. We hope you'll keep your eye out for all of those. And of course, find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter and YouTube and Instagram.
We're everywhere, man. We are
just
all
look
over
for us
the
and
place.
We're around. But we love it when you interact with us, and we love hearing from you, and makes us happy. We're glad to be involved, and we're glad to think that we play a small role in your happiness.
Small rule, my eye. We are your happiness.
And
everybody,
now
we'll talk to you next week.
And now I'm going to go find another man to massage me.
Oh, gross. All right. See you, Jeff.
Bye, Al. Thanks for listening, friends. Hope you have a great week. And let us know if we can do anything for you. But for you.
No, don't. Don't do that.
No. We hope that you will have good opportunities.
Let Jeff know.
And go serve somebody. Do that.
See you, buddy.
See you, Al. Bye, friends. Thanks again for listening in. This Week in Mormons is out.
New day leaks through the window. An old soul song comes on the alarm clock radio. We walk the 40 blocks to the middle of the place we heard that everything would be. And there were barricades to keep us off the street. The crowd kept pushing forward till they swallowed the police. Yeah, they went wild. Yeah, they went wild. Yeah, they went wild. Yeah, they went wild.
Of course!